Chapter 43. Recovery. Toast Party unveils manifesto. Article in The Toad, August 4th, 1988. Mr. Redmond Vanderpost, whose ruling Toast, formerly Common Sense Party, took control of the nation last week, announced the party's manifesto to raise the country from economic and social collapse. Mr. Vanderpost began by announcing mandatory toast-eating requirements for all citizens on a sliding scale based on age, then proposed a drive to place a new toaster in every home within a year. In the long term, continued Mr. Vanderpost, we will instigate a 5-year plan to upgrade all our manufacturing facilities to build a new brand of super toaster that will sweep aside all competition and make England the toast capital of the world. Critics of the Toast Manifesto indicated alarm at Post's strident calls for a North Atlantic Toast Alliance, and pointed out that by excluding non-toast-eating nations, it would create unnecessary international tension. Mr. Vanderpost has not yet responded, and has called for a reform of Parliament. I went home 2 weeks later to a house that was so full of flowers it looked like Kew Gardens. I still didn't have complete command of the right-hand side of my body, but every day it seemed a little bit more like part of me, a little less numb. I sat and looked out the open French windows into the garden. The air was heavy with the scents of summer, and the breeze gently played upon the net curtains. Friday was drawing with some crayons on the floor, and I could hear the clackety-clack of Landon's old Underwood typewriter next door. And in the kitchen, Louis Armstrong was on the wireless, singing La Vie en Rose. It was the first time I had been able to relax for almost as long as I could remember. I was going to need an extended convalescence, but would go back to work eventually. Perhaps at Spec Ops, perhaps at Juris Fiction, perhaps both. I came to say goodbye. It was Hamlet. I had learned from him earlier that William Shakespeare had managed to extricate Hamlet from the Merry Wives of Windsor, and both plays were as they should be, the one enigmatic, the other a spin-off. "Are you sure you're..." He silenced me with a wave of his hand and sat down on the sofa while Alan gazed at him adoringly. "I've learned a lot of things while I've been here," he said. "I've learned that there are many Hamlets, and we love each one of them for their different interpretation. I liked Gibson's because it was the least amount of dithering. Orson, because he did it with the best voice. Gielgud, for the ease in which he placed himself within the role, and Jacoby for his passion. By the way, have you heard of this Branner fellow?" "No." "He's just starting to get going. I've got a feeling his Hamlet will be stupendous." He thought for a moment. "For centuries I've been worrying about audiences seeing me as a mouthy, spoiled brat who can't make up his mind about anything. But, having seen the real world, I can understand the appeal. My play is popular because my failings are your failings, my indecision the indecision of you all. We all know what has to be done. It's just that sometimes we don't know how to get there. Acting without thought doesn't really help in the long run. I might dither for a while, but at least I make the right decision in the end. I bear my troubles and take arms against them. And thereby lies a message for all mankind. Although I'm not exactly sure what it is. Perhaps there's no message. I really don't know. Besides, if I don't dither, there's no play." "So you're not going to kill your uncle in the first act?" "No. In fact, I'm going to leave the play exactly as it is. I've decided instead to focus my energies towards being the Juris Fiction agent for all of Shakespeare's works. I'll have a go at Marlowe, too, but I'm not keen on Webster." "That's excellent news," I told him. "Juris Fiction will be very happy." He paused. "I'm still a bit annoyed that someone told Ophelia about Emma. It wasn't you, was it?" "On my honour." He got up, bowed, and kissed my hand. "Come and visit me, won't you?" "You can count on it," I replied. "Just one question. earth did you find Daphne Farquhar? She's the recluse's recluse. He grinned. I didn't. By the morning of the superhoop, I had managed to gather about 9 people. There's a limit to how much anti-Kane sentiment you can muster going door-to-door in Swindon at 2 in the morning. So there never was a Farquhar fan club? Oh, I'm sure there is somewhere, but Kane didn't know it now, did he? I laughed. I've a feeling you're going to be an asset to jurisfiction, Hamlet. And I want you to take something with you as a gift from me. A gift? I don't think I've ever had one of those before. No? Well, always a first time for everything. I want you to have Alan.
The dodo?
I think he'll be an invaluable addition to Elsinore Castle. Just don't let him get into the main story. Hamlet looked at Alan, who looked back at him longingly. Thank you, he said, with as much sincerity as he could. I'm deeply honoured. Alan went a bit floppy as Hamlet picked him up, and a few moments later they both vanished back to Elsinore. Hamlet to further continue his work as a career procrastinator, and Alan to cause trouble in the Danish court.
Hello, sweet pea.
Hi, Dad. You did a terrific job over that super hoop.
How are you feeling?
Pretty good. Did I tell you that as soon as Zivilkix got hit by the number 23 bus, the ultimate likelihood index of that Armageddon rose to 83%?
No, you never told me that. Just as well, really. I wouldn't have wanted you to panic.
Dad, who was St. Zivilkix?
He leaned closer. Don't tell a soul, but he was someone named Steve Schultz of the Toast Marketing Board. I think I might have recruited him, or he might have approached me to help. I'm not sure. History has rewritten itself so many times, I'm really not sure how it was to begin with. It's a bit like trying to guess the original colour of a wall when it's been repainted 8 times. All I can say is that everything turned out okay, and that things are far weirder than we can know. But the main thing is that Goliath now answers to the Toast Marketing Board, and Kane is out of power. The whole thing has been rubber-stamped into historical fact, and that's the way it's going to stay.
Dad?
Yes.
How did you manage to jump Schultz, or Zivilkix, or whoever he was, all the way from the 13th century, without the chronoguards spotting what you were up to?
Where'd you hide a pebble, sweet pea?
On a beach.
And where do you hide a 13th century impostor saint?
With lots of other 13th century impostor saints?
He smiled.
You sent all 28 of them forward just to hide St. Zivilkix.
27, actually. One of them was real. But I didn't do it alone. I needed someone to whip up a typhoon in the Dark Ages as cover. Someone with remarkable skills as a time traveller. An expert who can surf the timeline with a skill I will never possess.
Me?
He chuckled. No, silly. Friday. The little boy looked up when he heard his name and chewed a crayon, made a face and spat the bits on Pickwick, who jumped up in fright and ran away to hide. Meet the future head of the Chrono Guard, sweet pea.
How did you think he survived Landon's eradication?
I stared at the little boy, who stared back and smiled. Dad looked at his watch. Well, I've got to go. Nelson's up to his old tricks again. Time waits for no man, as we say.